Hello, everybody, and welcome to Geek Actually, episode 126 for the 2nd of April, 2011. Can I say I am so glad it's not the 1st of April, because everybody gets silly around the 1st of April, and so we got to skip that.
I don't know whether we managed to skip that. The tech world just seems to have gone mental over the last few hours, and things have been going crazy in computers.
Well, I did consider putting up a really stupid post yesterday on the site, and so I thought, you know what? I'm ignoring April 1st. I really am just going to ignore it completely. My name is David McVeigh. I'm joined in studio here by Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
I'm all right.
This is the Geek Actually podcast. I should say this is the all new, although it's not really new now. We've been going for about 5-6 weeks.
The repackaged
Geek Actually podcast, which is, of course, our old tech show and our old after show, pressed and mushed and squeezed together.
We tried to breed some sort of a hybrid. We stuck them both in a teleport chamber and they came out merged together.
Until the juice of weird geekness dripped from it.
Stop.
We collected it and that's what this show is.
Don't anyone ever quote us on that.
And we actually have a guest in the, not in the studio. Those who are watching know that's not true. But we do actually have a guest via Skype, which is Jacob Oberman. How are you?
43 beans in every cup.
And for those who don't know who Jacob Oberman is, Jacob was the co-host who started this whole beast with me.
He's part of the original crew.
Yeah, about almost 3 years ago now. So
I didn't start anything. I just tagged along.
He just jumped in for the fun. Jumped on the ride.
So Jacob is, of course, now down in Victoria, so he can't join us in the studio, but he very excitedly got in touch with me the other day because of some very interesting piece of install trickery on the iPad 2, and we're going to talk about that in just a second. We'll get through a little bit of feedback first, though, if that's okay with you, Jake.
Go ahead.
Now, just to remind everybody that our researcher for this show is David Murray, a.k.a. Delta Knight, in our chat room. He's also our moderator in our chat room. Delta?
Oh, that's who Delta Knight is.
Yeah. Delta Knight works for us.
One of us.
Stay on his good side. He has the ban button. All right. And for those who are wondering what this chat room is, we do go out live every Saturday. Now, we normally go out at about 12 o'clock. Today, it's now 12:45. We've had a few technical issues all morning. But you know what? It happens. It happens.
By the way, my studio is still fine. There we go.
So my chat room just decided to work all of a sudden as well. All right, so we've had a few problems. Now, as we usually start the show, we have a little bit of feedback. Now, I actually received so much feedback this week that I can't get to all of it. I do apologize. So if you send feedback and we don't read it today, we may actually even read it next week. But keep that feedback coming in. It is fantastic. I'm going to bring up a feedback line on screen. You can send us voicemails at 02801131167 or our Skype ID is geekactually. If you're cheap like me, or feedback at geekactually.com is the address that you send things to. Okay. So we have some feedback that says, hey guys, found this interesting article about nano generators. Sounds very promising. One step closer to a new type of power supply. And this is from Tristan. Now, Tristan, we actually did talk about these generators many weeks ago. Now, this was the kinetic generators, the ones where as you moved, they would generate. Well, it seems that they've actually, and I've actually closed the web browser now anyway. There is an article that we'll put in the show notes, which basically shows the new chips, and they're talking about weaving it into hoodies and stuff like that. So as you dance, you'll be able to charge your phones and stuff. It's a really interesting little article. So do check that out. I did have the article set up, but as I said, we had technical issues. Did I tell you we had technical issues?
Oh, yes.
All right. So, Tristan, thank you for sending that through. That is really interesting stuff. But as I said, I don't have the article in front of me. But we will have the article in the show notes for you to have a look at. But we did discuss this once before. It's just it looks like it's coming to fruition now.
Awesome.
Which is nice. Jake, would you like to have a kinetic charger for your iPod?
Are you kinetic enough to make that useful?
Well, the question is how many watts is this thing putting out?
About the same as a AAA battery, I think. So it's from memory. This is going from the article's memory. I think it generates about as much power as a AAA battery. So the idea would be that if you have several of these things woven into your clothing, you'd be able to, over time, generate enough power to just have a dribble charge.
Well, the latest that I've heard from Dr. Carl is that we're going to be moving over from silicon chips to graphene.
Yeah, we talked about that on the show many weeks ago as well. Graphene is the new zinc oxide, it would seem. It's being used for everything.
Correct. So theoretically, if it's using less power and there's less resistance with graphene, that would mean there'd be less requirement for the power generated now. So, you know, it's doable.
Yeah, it's doable. Yeah, doable. You're walking around, you go from place to place, you put, a couple of, lots of charge in your phone. It seems useful to me. I think it's a great idea.
I think, look, the idea, anything that we can do to replace current battery technology is a good thing.
It's the thing standing in the way. It is the bottleneck of technology right now,
in my
opinion.
Well, if rubbing causes friction and friction causes heat, how many wanks to boil a kettle? Sorry.
Man, no, dude, it was worth it.
I'd keep the shower hot.
is Mirren in today?
No. She's not here today, but you can take her place for us. All right, so we also have some email, another one from Tristan. Boy, Tristan writes to us a lot. In fact, I would like to point out that the next three emails are from... No, no, the next one is from Tristan as well, who says, I love how they called it... And now, this is a little video we're going to show. In fact, I'll play the video here in the background because it's very quiet, and we'll just play it in the background here while we're talking. Now, Jake, I know you can't see this video because you're on Skype, but let me just say he's a creepy mofo. Okay. basically, it says here, I love how they call it the iMobot. Did they not see the movie iRobot? The robot apocalypse cometh. It's all we need is a robot that can add to itself and become bigger. It's a modular robot. Now, what you're seeing on screen for the audio listeners is this little robot that basically has two connectors and little wheels on the side. And this is just one component. And if you watch this video, you can actually see that it can articulate in almost any direction. It can stand itself up. It can do all sorts of weird-ass shit. And the idea is that this is one component, and we can just keep adding to this. You just add more and more and more of these. The one where it actually stands up, because at the moment it's kind of rolling around on the ground, it flips itself over and stands up.
Oh, wow.
That's the part that freaks me out a little bit.
Is this something from DARPA?
Probably.
seems like the kind of stuff they would try and put together.
I actually have a link here. I'll see if I can find out. The link will be in the show note for more about this. Delta actually sent this link, this video through as well, which is why it was first on my radar and why it was on the board. And then I get an email from Tristan, and I think, wow, caught people's attention, basically. Yeah. It doesn't actually say DARPA. It says... who does it say here? It says it's from... No, it doesn't actually say.
You guys have seen, and I'm assuming Delta has seen, Big Dog by DARPA.
Oh, yeah. You showed me Big Dog 3 years ago, man.
Extraordinary.
Yeah, have you seen Little Dog?
Yes, I've seen Little Dog, yeah.
Little Dog was pretty impressive, too. They're actually now saying that Little Dog and Big Dog, for those who don't know, these are four-legged robots that actually operate in, like, natural movement. They can actually steady themselves, right themselves when off balance. It's a remarkable thing. They're actually talking about using them as rescue robots.
They're designed to go into enemy territory and recover survivors. And they've got a very small petrol engine that's powering the hydraulics.
Yeah. Mm.
So they make this. They sound like a little lawnmower, more or less.
Yeah, I don't know where you're standing on back episodes of the show, Jake, but Josh and I have been covering for the last, probably now 5 months or 6 months, the impending robot apocalypse that we believe is coming.
Coming.
Well, what's that one you showed me that freaked me the hell out?
Which one?
the army one, the soldier.
Oh, yeah, the things that look like Segways with human torsos on them.
Yeah.
That stuff's weird.
Yeah, they use them for target practice because they move like humans. Yeah, very scary stuff. So we've actually been collecting, every week we collect another story, and I think this is, we've just found the major component for our androids, basically.
Oh, really?
Yeah, this thing's just creepy, man. This robot is just, this modular robot.
That's the
kind
of thing that when you blow off a limb, it just keeps moving.
Yeah, it can rebuild itself. Can you imagine we're going to get to like Transformer size with this
No.
All right. Well, that's it for feedback today. I know there was more feedback. Please just keep them coming. We got kind of deluged in feedback this week, which was kind of nice. But at the same time, it leaves us a little bit like, where the hell do we start? All right. So, Jacob.
Yeah.
Tell us about iMovie.
iMovie. Okay. So, I hear from a producer friend of mine. He's bought an iPad 2, and iMovie is for offer. And I'm thinking to myself, well, is it going to be architecture specific, you know, vis-a-vis PPC and Intel? Mm-hmm. Or theoretically, should this thing work on my iPad 1? Now, I've never been much of a hacker, so to speak, and I'm not interested in jailbreaking my device. So I did a little research. I went on to Mac Rumors, and people were discussing the fact that, yes, they tried to go into the App Store and download it, and, of course, you get this message saying, no, no, this is for the iPad 2 only.
Right.
And then I read something about the iPhone configuration utility, which is actually from Apple support.
Yes.
And this allows you to go into the folders on any other external device.
Mm-hmm.
Based on this, I thought, would it be possible to download the app via your iTunes on your desktop?
Mm-hmm.
And then place it into the folder. Lo and behold, it is. Mm-hmm. So everyone out there that has an iPad 1, well, firstly, may I say there were people who tried this and said, oh, look, we downloaded it and put it into the folder via the configuration utility, but every time we sync it, the app disappears. Well, that's not true. It's not true at all.
Well, actually, I'll back that argument up because I found out a little bit of facts, and I've actually installed it. I ran the crack as you did, and yes, iMovie works perfectly. There's no problem. It's probably a little bit laggier than if it was on an iPad 2. That's purely because you got two cores and 9x speed graphics. But it works.
Mm. It works, but the thing is, I found it a little disappointing. It doesn't have, you know, anywhere near the amount of transitions and all the accoutrements that you would expect to find on the bigger version. And in fact, in many respects, Real Director is another great iPad app that's more loaded up. It's a simple task to get it on. Would you like me to describe how to put it on?
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, go for it. I'll talk about my experiences and the downsides afterwards, but go for it.
Yeah, fine. So it's pretty simple, guys. First of all, make sure that the iPad is not connected to your desktop to begin with. Go to Apple and download the iPhone configuration utility.
3.3.
Sorry?
3.3.
3.3. Yeah, make sure it's the 3.3. Download that. As soon as you've done that, open your iTunes on your desktop, go to Apps, and order iMovie. That will download.
Mm-hmm.
Once that occurs, you go back to the iPhone configuration utility and you open the apps, and there it will appear. Now what you do is connect your iPad and wait for it to sync, and then in the iPad configuration utility you go to Devices, and your iPad should show up there, and automatically the app will appear in the list of all of the current apps that you have on your iPad.
Mm-hmm.
The only difference is all the others will say installed or uninstall, rather. It'll show uninstall, whereas iMovie will show up as install. Click install. Once it's installed, you just resync your iPad, and away you go. It works.
Mm. Right. Okay, so now the downside to this. There's been actually many, many users, and I'm one of them, so I can actually vouch for this. What actually is the complaint about it? Yes, it works, and everything's fine at that point. The next time you go to sync your iPad, what will happen is as soon as it hits iMovie, it'll actually come up saying not authorized.
Yes, authorize and cancel.
That's right. Now, at this point, if you say deauthorize, it'll actually remove iMovie from your iPad. If you say authorize, it'll pop up saying put your password in. You type your password in, and it'll say you're now authorized, and then immediately pop up with please authorize. So you type in your password. It says you're now authorized. Please authorize. And it'll ask for your password again. And basically what it's done is it's gone into what's called an authorization loop, and you can never actually authorize it because iMovie is technically not permitted and was not installed via iTunes, so therefore it can't actually authorize it through iTunes. Now, the way out of that is you say cancel.
You say cancel,
and iMovie stays there quite happily. The downside to this is no other new software that you try and install from iTunes actually installs, because at that point it stops the install process because you've said cancel. Now, this actually happened because I downloaded 3 new apps on the iPhone, sunk my iPhone back to iTunes, and it put those apps into my iTunes. Obviously, it copied them over to iTunes. When I plugged in my iPad, I have it to sync new software automatically. It immediately tried to sync those 3 programs. They showed up on iTunes. You know how you've got your sample screen?
Yeah.
It actually shows up there as those 3 programs are there. You get it stuck into the authorization loop, so you go, yeah, whatever. You say, finally, say cancel. Everything says sync complete. You hit eject, take it out. Fire up your iPad, the 3 new apps aren't there.
Aww.
Because it actually just, it skipped them, basically, because it couldn't get past iMovie. Now, as soon as I uninstalled iMovie, plugged it back in, bang, everything just synced back in, like normal, right?
So it's not really a harmful kind of situation.
So it's not a harmful,
it doesn't... if you wanted to play with it, which it's worth playing with, especially if you don't have an iPhone... it's definitely worth doing the install.
Yeah, and all it means is that if you want to play with iMovie, make sure your iPad is all sunk and everything is fine and happy. Then run the process that Jake just described. Install iMovie. Unplug after you're all done. Play with iMovie and so forth. Just be aware that the next time you plug in, you're going to have to take iMovie off first, do your sync, then put it back on again.
Yeah, which is not too much work.
No, it's not too much. It doesn't take very long at all, but it is kind of...
No, it doesn't. Now, the other issue was, look, the reason I wanted... both the digital audio workstation and a movie editor, so I can do things on the run, work-wise.
Mm-hmm.
And my worry is that it wasn't powerful enough to complete the tasks. But in fact, it is. But the other concern with iMovie, of course, on the iPad was they seemed to it was insinuated that you could only edit footage that was shot by the iPad.
I like this one. You told me about this. I like this. Go ahead.
And I thought, what sort of chutzpah is this, and what bloody use is it? Because the camera resolution on the iPad 2 isn't anything extraordinary.
It's really not.
And who can imagine you walking down the beach, capturing your summer holiday videos, holding a bloody iPad up all over the place?
Yeah, no, that definitely won't get stolen or anything.
I equated the back-facing camera on the iPad as basically saying it's like having a camera on the back of your iMac. I mean, what's the point,
So, anyway, I thought to myself, well, look, this doesn't gel. I want to look at the specs and see what sort of... formats the iPad 2 holds, and it's just like the iPad 1, 720p at 30 frames per second, which is what MP4 is.
Yeah.
And I thought, hang on a minute, why doesn't anything else go onto this? And so I thought to myself, what sort of way can I it was just a process of deduction. So I thought, okay, I'm going to stick a piece of footage into iMovie on my desktop.
Mm-hmm.
And export it out as a .mov,
right?
.mov, and see if I can put that on. No, doesn't accept it. And then I thought to myself, what if I actually click on a saved clip? So you click on the wording so mm-hmm. that it yeah. highlights so you can change it.
Do a name change, yeah.
Do a name change. I beg your pardon. Do a name change and change .mov to .mp4. I did that. Saved it, dropped it on, away you go.
Now, I would actually be very curious to know, and if any of our listeners out there can write to us, I'd be very interested to know if that actually works on PC. Because the thing is, Jacob, like myself, works on a Macintosh, and Macs actually don't use file extensions. File extensions are just a hangover, basically, from the old PC days. And when we put a dot something at the end of it, it sees it as a file extension, but it's actually not real. It doesn't actually do something as such.
Yeah.
So you can easily rename extensions. So as an example, comic book reader files or CBR files are actually just zip files. And you just rename zip CBR, right? Yeah. So it can read. On a PC, file extensions do mean something. And I wonder if you can easily just change the file extension name on a PC movie file and have it do the same thing.
Maybe not. And something else I would say, I seem to find that I tried iPhone configuration utility on a PC.
Yep.
And although the software operates, nothing shows up.
Oh, really? That's interesting. Because as far as I was aware, I've actually got a link in our show notes to... give me a second, I'll tell you the exact site. I've got a link in the show notes to Wired.com, which actually has this install tutorial. So for those who are listening, if you want to actually follow how this works, Wired has a good tutorial on it.
And, oh, do they? Oh, good.
Yeah, I think it's actually brought over probably from Mac Rumors or whoever the source was anyway. But the link I've got is from Wired. And they actually say Mac or PC, this will work. And the configuration tool is for both. You can get a PC version of the configuration tool, so it should work. But
the item shows up, but it's grayed out.
Right. I was going to say, as we've talked about on this show often, Apple software, even when it's made available for the PC, generally works like shit on the PC. It's a simple equation of... Apple techs have never known how to write PC software. They really haven't. So I would say that this is very much geared towards the Mac user, and they probably begrudgingly said, well, there's PC users too. We better
fuck those guys.
Yeah, fuck those guys. You know, whatever. We better
do it. I would have thought it had been in their best interests to actually make it functional on the PC so as to, you know, disenfranchise PC users, but to get them over, you know, get them to hop the fence.
Okay, Callison in our chat room has actually just written that you can do the same on a PC, which is just change the extension. Yes, I was aware of that part. But what he does say is that it won't work for video files. He says for video files on a PC, you must re-encode them to change formats.
Right.
So it could be a much longer process on a PC. Now, I used to do a lot of video work on PCs, but I haven't for many years since moving all my video work to a Mac. So I can't verify this, but it sounds right to me. It sounds like you can't just throw an extension change on a PC, because PCs are a lot more finicky about their extensions. But, you know, I think it's great, though. I think it's really interesting. And this configuration tool will actually allow you to do this with lots of different software. It's not just iMovie. Anything that is supposedly not available for your particular device, give it a shot, because you might find that they imposed it. Now, why would Apple impose a restriction like this on iMovie if it does work on an iPad 1? And the answer is really simple, which is that Apple is absolutely obsessed with perfection. And if iMovie does not work to perfection on iPad 1, which, as we said, it's a little bit slower moving, then they are not going to let you do it, because they'll say, we want it to be on iPad 1, so it's perfect. You know, we want it to be on iPad 2. Do I agree with that policy? Not entirely. I think Apple's a little bit ham-handed over this sort of stuff, and considering the fact that they let GarageBand through, which once you get more than 6 tracks in GarageBand on an iPad 1, it slows to a fucking halt. You know what I mean? I don't know why they allowed that to go through on iPad 1, quite frankly.
So they did allow that through, did they? Because I put it on via the same means.
No, you don't need to. GarageBand will install on iPad 1 normally. I've got it on mine. I've had it since day one.
I've got it on mine, but I use the configuration
tool. Yeah, no, you don't have to use a configuration tool for that one. That one will install properly, and it works. It works very, very well. But it's only when you start getting into multiple tracks, because of the CPU difference, once you start getting into difference in multiple tracks, it starts to grind to a halt. And you'll probably find it'll eventually crash out on you. But, you know, I'm surprised that they let that one go through, but they didn't let iMovie go through.
Probably because of the camera. They probably want... And it's one of those sneaky Apple tactics, in my opinion, where it's like, it is also a reason. It's one defining feature that the old people can't use. You know, I'm sorry. No, I actually believe...
There's one defining feature that the old people can't use. Can you imagine when we're in our 80s, we'll be reminiscing about the iPad 1? What a wonderful machine.
Oh, speaking of being in your 80s, what a nice segue you gave me there, Jake, and you didn't even know you were doing it. We did have one other piece of feedback. I didn't have it printed out. That's why I didn't read it. But we have a video that was attached to this, and I have to play this for you. Now, for those in our chat room, you can watch this video right now. We can listen to it here on the show. And for those who are on the audio podcast, have a listen, but follow the link in the show notes. But basically, Geek Betty, our number one from day one listener, Geek Betty, sent this through from ABC TV and here in Australia. And it's all about using robots to assist the elderly. And if this isn't a step in the direction of the robot apocalypse, let me tell you, I don't know what is. So have a look at this and tell me what you think of this.
Helping out with some senior citizens. A Melbourne nursing home is using them to interact and play games with residents. The home says the robots improve the quality of life for people with dementia. Medical reporter Sophie Scott has the story.
This robot might look like a toy, but it's actually a whole lot more.
It's gauging the old people to decide who is ready for euthanasia.
The elderly develop a sense of independence.
It incorporates emotionally intelligent software so that the robot can read a person's feelings by the tone in their voice and interact accordingly. Researchers are running a trial to see what impact the robots have on nursing home residents.
It can also detect their moods. For example, if they're in a low mood, it can send emails to their relatives to come and visit them.
It can quiz residents to keep them mentally active.
I'm happy to be spending some time with you. Let's begin the quiz.
Its eyes are twin cameras with a face recognition system, while the ears are microphones that can pick up sounds. It can track and memorise up to 30 different faces. While the robot roams around, it uses an ultrasound system in its chest to detect objects. It
can walk. Come on, that's pretty freaky.
And when it is running low, it knows to recharge itself. And Alzheimer's Australia is using robot pets for patients with dementia with great success.
I'm sorry. As soon as that seal comes, I go, all I can think is an Alzheimer's patient going, "What is it? Kill it!"
Glad to be of service.
That would scare the crap out of me.
Are these realistic-looking toy seals talking to you? I'm sorry, there's something very wrong with that. All I can think is these robots go around doing face recognition and checking your emotional profile to see who is ready to be removed from the nursing home.
Look, they are going to end up with a whole bunch of broken ones, in my opinion, because like, if you were in the middle of like a mind coma at 80, and you've just... You've zoned out, and then you wake up, and there's a talking robot seal in your lap. You will freak the fuck out.
She reminds me of my ex-wife.
I just sat there looking at going, this little robot walking around going, "Hello, old person."
How are you? The things we've got to look forward to.
And this robot probably goes around going, "How are you feeling?" And all these old people going, "Fine, I'm fine, thank you. Fine, really, really, I'm fine today."
And it just sort of goes, and then just walks
off. Are you sure?
I can't wait until we make them full size and then cover them with that skin that the Japanese are developing, and then
The sensations, and then we teach them the knife cutting, the meat, yeah.
And they can smile like that creepy goddamn Japanese robot. Yep, no.
Oh, I think we should put the Angel of Death in every nursing home. Could you imagine?
She just calms them up.
You people wouldn't believe.
All right, Jake, one more before you. One more for you, because I think this is right up your alley.
We'll leave my alley out of this.
I think we might be ready for terraforming, dude. I think we might be ready to start terraforming planets.
Oh, really?
This is from a Geeks Are Sexy article, which Delta sent through to us. And isn't this the creepiest looking dude you've ever seen?
And that guy's devoted to his work. That mustache.
He's a MIT scientist. And he basically has declared that this is like the holy grail of science. They have developed an artificial leaf.
An artificial leaf.
That actually absorbs sunlight and does the whole osmosis thing.
And it photosynthesizes.
Photosynthesizes, produces oxygen, the whole bit.
Yeah.
So I think we are ready for terraforming, man.
Wow, so they've made one leaf, though.
Yeah, it's one. It's a prototype. But the point is, they made it work.
Wow, so we can just drop these things on planets and...
Well, I don't know if that's what they're... I think they want to fix Earth first.
Well, it would have to be an Earth-sized planet, I would say. I've read recently, and it makes sense, that Mars could never be terraformed.
Yep, no,
although it once had, terraformation, because its magnetosphere is too small.
Yep. Also, isn't it? Its ice is actually liquid. Is actually nitrogen or something?
Yeah,
like that.
No.
Yeah, but its magnetosphere is too small, and it's because of the size of the planet. And as a consequence, it just gets bombarded by solar rays and would kill anything living. Really?
Yeah, but once again, I don't think we should be looking at the planets. I think what we need to start looking at is moons.
Yeah.
Not necessarily Mars, but of other planets, any planet.
Oh, definitely. Oh, look,
moons
look,
are where it's at.
Europa and Io and and Calypso and so forth. Yeah, yeah. Definitely. And Titan.
Yeah, moon, yeah, moons are where it's at. I think the moons are, yeah, moons around Jupiter. Yeah. Moons around Saturn. The yep, moons around, yep, Venus might be getting a bit close to the sun, but yep, we need to start looking at moons because I think the planets have pretty well established that they're, you know, no man's land.
Yeah,
but
forget it, forget it, yeah, forget it. Yeah, no, no, they've got their eye on the moons. They've got their eye, yeah, on the moons.
Because they've actually discovered. I mean, there's definitely moisture on Europa. I mean,
yep,
you know, there's definitely some form of moisture, whether or not it's, you know, something we can use.
Yeah.
I don't know. But we also did that interesting article several weeks ago, Jake, about the caves on the moon. Did you see this?
No.
Where they discovered holes in the surface of the moon, and they've discovered tunnel work that looks like it might be underneath the surface. And they're saying that this now brings back the idea of possible things like possible moon bases and stuff because you build them underground.
Yeah.
Which I think is fascinating.
I'm
going to
go live on the moon.
Yeah, I want to go live on the moon. I think that would be cool.
Cool. We'll do our podcast live from the moon.
broadcasting live from the moon. It's geek, actually. all right. Yeah, so I just thought the idea of an artificial leaf really kind of thrilled me. I thought the idea – I mean, the whole concept of terraforming a planet would be that we need something that can produce oxygen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Will you post that on your
– Yeah, all of our links go in our show notes. Uh-huh, so you'll be able to find that. We also have Stephen Conroy putting his foot in it again, which I always thought was very interesting. Stephen Conroy is our
His foot was never out of it.
Stephen Conroy is our communications minister, as we all know, here in Australia, for those who are listening from outside of the country, which is a great deal of Americans now, by the way. Stephen Conroy is the moron who's trying to censor our internet. But he actually said, where is it? He actually said about the NBN this week, the National Broadband Network. He actually said, NBN Co. will operate on a wholesale-only, open and equivalent access basis, delivering long-term benefits for competition and consumers. That sounds great. That means basically anybody who's running an ISP can buy time on the NBN. Fantastic.
Yeah, but
however, it says, unfortunately, this is an article that was on Business Spectator, by the way, being our show notes. Unfortunately, it goes on to say that the current wholesale access pricing model will prohibit direct participation on the NBN to providers with less than 250,000 customers.
That's a
scam.
So as they put in their article, oops.
Yeah, they're. So who does that mean exactly?
So any basically means that all of the small ISPs will not have access.
So
to
any of the
NBN,
ones with decent plans,
which means that they'll have to buy NBN time from the major ISPs, which means they don't get the direct wholesale pricing. They'll have to pay the inflated costs of whatever the ISPs want to sell them. Hopefully, this will get fixed.
I would bloody well hope so.
How are they going to assess how many customers you have?
It shouldn't make any difference. But it shouldn't make any difference.
But could you fudge it, is what I'm saying. If and when they put it in and they say, no, 250 only.
Well, no, you'd have to show logs. You'd have to show records, I'm sure.
Yeah, you probably
You'd have active subscribers. But the point is, the point of
but
that...
But my point is that if you could replicate it, you know, artificially and go, here we are, 250.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean,
like Ellison's idea. We'll just all have to join AINet.
Absolutely.
If everyone jumps on AINet, we'll be okay.
Well, it's funny you mention AINet because they're in the news as well. But we'll come back to them in just 1 second. Let me just finish this. What it basically means is that NBN Co. needs to fix this because the whole concept of the NBN to start with was that any ISP could buy wholesale bandwidth packets from the cable network, from this fiber optic network.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The fact that there is this limitation on there, I think, is a big oops. And I think somebody hasn't told Conroy. I think Conroy and the government are still working on the principle that anybody can buy time on this thing. And NBN's going, wait. Wait, you know, so I have a feeling that we'll see this fixed, but at the moment it's a big foot in the mouth because he's saying one thing, NBN's saying something completely different. So anyway,
if you're in Australia, I would be lobbying the Greens Party,
right,
to put their two bits in about removing that 250,000 cap. Because they are the people who are holding the balance of power.
Federally, they are. Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Well, federally and those two independents. So, look, the bottom line is, though, on all of this, Jake, I don't think that federal government's going to be around for another 6 months.
No, I agree.
All it's going to take is one misstep, and if they get raked over the coals, we're back to election.
Yeah, well, you saw what happened with Gillard. She berated Brown in the past couple of days, and Brown's like, "What? What are you doing? We hold the balance of power. Why are you having a go at us?"
Yeah, no, I don't see it, and it's a real shame. But I don't see it. I don't see it surviving. I think we'll be going back to the polls pretty soon. This was a shaky, shaky minority government to start with. Funny you bring up iiNet, though. Gizmodo.com has an article that basically says that AFACT, A-F-A-C-T, the group that is representing the music and movie industries in the piracy battles, have already announced that they are going to appeal the iiNet case that we talked about a few weeks ago, which is where iiNet, of course, beat them in court, saying we're not responsible. The second time they beat them. Basically, for those who aren't aware, AFACT has taken iiNet to court, saying they are responsible for any piracy downloaded on their network. And basically saying that they are encouraging people and they are not being harsh enough with their people, and so therefore they are responsible, and so therefore iiNet needs to pay damages. And iiNet has basically said a big fuck you to these people, saying that that we are like a phone company and we are not responsible for what people say on the phone. We are just...
Or we're not a postal company. We're not there to open up everyone's mail
exactly
to see if there's a CD in there that someone's copied.
Exactly. And they have done this twice now, and they have resoundingly won twice on this. Well, AFACT is not about to sit down, but this will be their last go at this because AFACT is basically saying that they are now taking it to the High Court of Australia. So this is the highest level it goes, guys, and they're going to take iiNet to the High Court. This is a gamble for them, though, because if they fail at this run, there's no more appeals. This is it. This is the highest they can go.
It'll be locked in stone. But look, I read an article recently about the Pirate Bay and their case. The fact that, you know, a torrent site technically doesn't hold any content. It just has a sign that points in the direction of where the content is.
Yeah, and that really worked well for places like Supernova and what was the other one?
Mini Nova.
Pirate Bay, the owners of Pirate Bay are in jail at the moment.
Mm. They're in jail, that's right. Yeah, so they did get them.
Yeah, they got them. And that's the thing, that argument that we don't hold the torrent, we are just an index, that's not holding water at the moment. People are getting really freaky about it. But, you know, this whole peer-to-peer thing is really, really freaky. I'm going to skip ahead here because there's a story way down the bottom of the list, which is about World of Warcraft being throttled in Canada. I don't know if you guys saw this, but all these World of Warcraft people started to freak out because their World of Warcraft was going really slowly. And you know what World of Warcraft people are like. Mm. You know? And it turns out that in World of Warcraft, there is a new update that actually uses a peer-to-peer component built into World of Warcraft to help speed things up. And Rogers in Canada throttles peer-to-peer.
Oh, no.
So basically, inadvertently, they throttled World of Warcraft, and they basically said, look, to fix this, just go and turn off the peer-to-peer feature in World of Warcraft, and it will fix itself. But the point is, they're throttling peer-to-peer.
Mm.
And that's the bigger issue, because peer-to-peer in itself is not illegal.
Mm.
BitTorrent in itself is not illegal. These are perfectly legal, and people use them for perfectly legal activity. BitTorrent itself is a legal company that hosts legal movies.
Yeah.
You know? And so you sit there and go, this insanity that people have got in their heads about you know, file sharing and everything else. It's like everything's bad, you know? Mm. And you go, what is wrong with you people? Get over it, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, the point is that there was another article that came out from The Australian .com.au this week, that there is a lawyer who is now basically saying to all the other ISPs, everybody needs to go into high alarm about this iiNet thing, because if iiNet by some miracle doesn't win the High Court appeal, this is going to open a precedent and the floodgates to every other ISP here in Australia. And he's basically just saying, be on guard. Start putting things in,
place now. I think more than be on guard, send a few of your lawyers over to help.
Yeah.
It's so, like, you know, if iiNet wins this, we all win. So, yeah.
Yeah. So this was an interesting article basically saying, I think there was one part here that says, this is from, who actually wrote this? Federal Court's latest decision, legal battle. Oh, man. See, I don't have a highlighter on this thing, so I can't find his name now. Where is his name? I can't find his name. He's an insurance advisor. Anyway, we'll say he's an insurance advisor for Gadams, and basically says, what is clear is that ISPs have no blanket defense, but must show that they have taken reasonable steps to prevent infringing acts. Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry, his name is Mr. Giblet. There we go. I don't know what his first name is, but Ray. Mr. Giblet.
Terrific name.
Ray Giblet.
It's a great name. Sorry?
Ray Giblet.
Ray Giblet. Thank you very much. He does say here, he says, IINet's policy was deficient because although it terminated the accounts of repeat infringers upon admission of an infringement or if ordered by a court, the policy was not communicated to customers and was not adequately implemented. However, if it was so deficient, why did they win twice?
That's weird.
Is my argument. Anyway, so the point is he's basically saying, get all your policies in place, make sure that you are shutting people down if you detect them and so forth, be ready for this because if this doesn't go through, pretty much everybody's going to be fucked on this one. So we'll skip that story. Who cares about that? So, I was about to talk about the Amazon cloud player, but you know what? If you're outside of America, it doesn't have any relevance anyway.
What's that?
Amazon has just...
I'm curious as well.
Amazon has just released a service, basically, that is like the holy mecca of music services, and it's what we all want, and it's what Lala used to do when Apple bought Lala, and everybody suspected Apple was going to incorporate this into iTunes and never have, and they might now with the data center, who knows? But basically, the idea is... on this SkyDrive, on this cloud drive, you can upload your entire music library. And then no matter where you are and whatever device you are, you can have access to your entire music collection.
That's cool.
via the net, right?
But is it, Josh? Because you're going to have some serious upload bandwidth to be able to do it.
Not so much for like mobile use, like 3G use, but going around to a friend's place and just being able to use any of their music.
Yeah, once your initial upload is done, then you don't have to keep doing it.
I have like 200 gigabytes a month of upload, and I have like 70 gigabytes of music. If I did half of it.
I'm not talking about content. I'm talking about speed of actually getting it all up there.
Oh, dude, I quite regularly on the way to work or something will just load up a YouTube song if I don't have it on my thing just to listen to it on the way to work.
But that's one song. I'm talking about, 25,000 songs that you've got on
the phone. I would still have everything downloaded to my phone and stuff like this. What I mean more is if you wanted to access it at a friend's house.
This doesn't change your existing setup. So all your localized music sunk to your pods and what have you.
I would still keep everything on a hard drive.
Yeah, it would all be sunk locally.
What's stopping me from using a VPN?
Well, you'd have to know the person's details to start with. Mm. And anything is hackable. I mean, once again, you're always going to run that risk. But the idea of this is that you have your music on the go.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
The whole concept is you have your music on the go.
For me, it would just be like Dropbox, except for I would be able to have all my music there.
Exactly. Yeah, here's the kicker to it, which is that Amazon gives you free space. I think it's 5 gigs to start with. And then if you buy music from Amazon, you immediately get 20 gigs for as soon as you buy that music. And I think you actually can expand on that. And it's all about what you purchase through them and so forth. Here's the kicker, though, which is, A, we can't buy digital music from Amazon because we're in Australia.
Yep.
B, Jake is right, our upload speeds aren't that great in Australia, and we are capped, which we don't have to
the
face in America.
The cap bit's what it would suck. I'm more thinking about for Americans.
Yeah, and C, the service isn't available to Australians anyway. No. So the entire thing becomes a pointless article. And one last thing, though, that I would point out that is for Amazon users and Android users, it is not available to iOS users.
Ugh.
So the entire thing just goes.
Cool idea that just fails.
Look, that's kind of why I brought it up, is this could be the future of what we're seeing music services to go like. Music industry has been very, very against this sort of stuff because, of course, you're putting your stuff on the cloud. Jake is right. It's like, oh, but then anybody can have it. Well, no, theoretically, only you have access to it, but it's your music.
Way, yeah, like Dropbox or anything like that. It's like, technically, you're the only one that has access to it.
Absolutely. All right, what time is it? Crap, we're running out of time here. All right. Gotta say, lastly in tech, we'll skip ahead to this one. Harvey Norman, Jerry Harvey. I love this. Jerry Harvey has finally admitted that we're going to have an online presence. We're going to have to set up an online store. God damn it. really mad about it, basically saying it's going to cannibalize his stores, and he's going to have to let people go, and they're probably going to end up closing stores because of it, and he probably won't make any money off it anyway, but they're going to set up an online store. Now, Jake, I don't know if you've been following this, but people like...
He's a dickhead.
He's a dickhead, and people like Kogan and stuff are basically...
He's going to make more money online because he's not paying rent with fucking warehouses.
Ah, but here's the trick, and this is what the first observer said to the whole thing, which is Harvey Norman will still fail dismally if they don't compete in prices. And that's the first step. If they put all their prices online as they are now in a store, which is sort of thing Jerry Harvey would do, nobody will shop there.
No, absolutely not.
Because you'll buy it somewhere else cheaper. You know,
he can have the same profit margin that he wants and then drop the prices accordingly.
Well, that's what you would think. But he is so anti-tech. He's so anti... so anti going online that he's just everything about this statement. He actually says, by this time next year, you'll see Harvey Norman with a pretty sizable internet presence. My heart's beating very strongly on whether we make any money out of it, Harvey said. I haven't got any choice. I've got to cannibalize our stores. he's such a drama queen.
What he's missing is the old school interaction between salesperson and customer. And look, he can still have that if he has, you know, a couple of stores open in each city, if people, you know, if there are old school people who want to go and do that.
And this is a great policy, saying the good guy's store here in Australia put up an online store recently, and they said that the owners are really happy with it. Basically, you order online and then you go pick it up from a store.
That's right.
You know, and that's all that Harvey Norman has to do, is something like that sort of model, and that would work. You know, you can have delivery, or you can go pick it up in a shop. You know,
he's a silly man.
He's a stupid man. I tell you what, he deserves being wiped out, quite frankly. Anyway, Jake, you got a little bit more time?
Oh yeah,
we're gonna do some geek shit. All right.
I hope you've got toilet paper ready.
Let's talk about absolute fucking addictions. All right.
Fucking addictions.
Not that kind of addiction. As in stupid addictions. Today's texting teenagers apparently are so addicted to texting that they actually do things like, let me see, I've got a quote here that says, Brooklyn, 10th grader, Ashlyn Olofsson, all right, Brookline, not Brooklyn as in the place, but Brookline, okay? Mm. Brookline is a suburb or city. It says 10th grader, Ashley Olofsson, let me say it again, 10th grader, okay, sleeps with her mobile phone under her pillow so she doesn't miss emergency, quote-unquote, texts, like if a friend broke up with her boyfriend.
Dear God.
Stephanie Kimball of Waltham, 14, is also available for urgent overnight correspondence such as, hey, seeing if you're awake. Oh, this article's a killer. It's from Gizmodo. And basically saying that, you know, studies are now showing that our teenagers are not getting enough sleep. They're getting broken sleep. They're literally sleeping with their phones under their pillows so the vibration will wake them up.
If they're hyper-stimulated. Look, it's on a very serious note, I think it's going to make for quite a dangerous world in the world to come. And it's already happening. You know, people who are lacking sleep and operating machinery.
I agree.
I don't get down on that at all.
The first thing I do, I sleep with my phone beside my bed, yes, because that's where my charger is. But the first thing I do is put it into silent mode. Put it into silent mode, put it beside my bed, plug it in. And I don't look at it again until I wake up.
To be honest, like, mine's close enough that I can hear it go off if it does. But unless I get, like, two lots of vibrations or a phone call or something like that, I won't bother picking it up.
My bedside table is a wooden bedside table. So if a phone is ringing, the multiple rings will vibrate against the wood of the table. It has woken me up in the past. A text message coming in will go buzz once. That won't wake me up. You know what I mean? So, and I am not going to answer a text message for, oh my God, who broke up with who, you know? I'm not going to answer that text message at 3 o'clock in the morning.
You don't have friends stupid enough to send you a message like that at 10 o'clock, so.
Thank God.
Yeah. Don't worry, Dave. I will never send you a message like that.
To be taught at schools.
Using your phone
as a secretary. So, you know. Look, if someone wants to get in touch with you seriously, they'll get in touch.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, exactly. In other words, you're checking it maybe 3 times a day.
Yeah.
You know?
Northy in our chat room says, here's a thought, hang out with real people.
Exactly. You know.
And Northy also points out, wouldn't sleeping with a phone under your pillow cause like brain cancer or something?
It's probably really not good for your head.
Yeah. Delta Knight says, keep the phones away from the kids. You know, it's like, look, this is all, I have a strict policy, and I'm kind of old school. I understand that. I'm old. Did I say that this today? I haven't said that today.
Yeah, no, you've said that today.
Okay, good. Okay, I have said that. I'm old, right? And I have a phone policy, which is that unless I know that you're expecting a call, like with you, for instance, like you text me or something like that, I don't call people after 9 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
Because it's just an old school policy that once 9 o'clock rolls around, I don't think it's polite to call people after 9 o'clock, you know? Unless there's an emergency. And an emergency is not Joe broke up with Sally. An emergency is, oh my God, your grandmother's in hospital. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yes, such and such just got hit by a car. Those are emergencies.
Those are emergencies. So, Jake is absolutely right. They should teach this in schools. Go back to phone etiquette. You know, mobile phones have thrown phone etiquette out the window.
Mm.
It's changed culture. It's changed culture. Sociologically speaking, you know, people are, workplaces, et cetera, are taking umbrage when you don't respond quick enough, because they're of the belief that you've got your phone on the whole time, which a lot of people do.
Yeah.
And then the other sociological aspect that frightens me is, and I see it firsthand, is with Facebook. Now, people that you have all this dialogue with, and then when you meet them in person, they're virtually silent.
Yeah.
I actually had to defend somebody at work recently because they had a day off because they were sick, and the boss came in and just attacked them over the fact that they were on Facebook that day. And I just looked at him and I go, you can do this shit from your bed with your phone now, dude. It doesn't matter. It's not like they're tweeting saying I'm down at the local pub and drinking a whole bunch of alcohol. Yes, social networking will continue to happen, same as phone calls or anything like this. You don't... Like, the very concept of what sick means has changed due to the fact that people think that they can just catch people faking sickness. It's like, no, we still keep living. We take a sick day so that we can get back in line with the rest of our work life. It's like, just because you're on their Facebook thing and you see them saying... I'm playing games. It's like, what else the fuck are you going to do when you're at home?
That's the equivalent of when you used to be sick and stay home from school and you watch daytime television, you know?
Well, and who the fuck gets the right to say that you weren't sick because you were playing games? I'm sorry. You were lying in bed.
Under a blanket.
You had a wireless controller in your hand. There's not much you were doing in this situation.
Absolutely.
And it's just, it's just silly, man.
It's an unspoken truth. I mean, you don't wave a flag about the fact that you're doing such things.
No, exactly. No, I agree. And that's what I said when the boss walked away to my friend. I'm like, dude, you don't walk around waving a flag on this shit. You have to kind of be a little bit sensitive about it because they're questioning it themselves.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm. Yeah.
Now, I've also got from the chat room, we've got Callison saying, I just don't call people.
Yeah, goddamn right.
Scuttlebug says, same here, Dave, so that he agrees with the 9 o'clock rule. Callison says, I hate talking on the phone, prefer email. And Delta says, I don't call people after about 9 p.m. unless they are out and I'm trying to meet them. Or something like that. That's sure. If you're all out and you know you're all out and you're trying to hook up, then that's fine. I'm talking about general phone calls at home.
Mine's 11 because most of my friends are all... geeks, so I know old. They're going. Yeah, they're all going to be awake at like 3 o'clock in the morning. You're the worst case scenario.
I didn't say
ring
me.
You at 3 o'clock in the morning. You'll still be up.
Look, I didn't say me. I'm a night owl. I'm saying most of the people who are in my age bracket, my friends, would have had their geritol and gone to bed by then. Jake, you understand what I'm saying?
I do indeed. What's coming up in the film show? What time's that?
Film show is coming up in about, probably a little under half an hour, and we're doing...
Lincoln Lawyer.
The Lincoln Lawyer.
The Lincoln Lawyer.
The new Matthew McConaughey film.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. What's this other film I've seen
This
recently?
Isn't a film show, dude. Let's get back onto it.
sorry.
We'll come back to the film show in a minute. I don't have video of this because I actually looked at the video and I thought, we carry an explicit tag, we have a warning at the beginning of the show, but even this might be pushing it just a little bit too far, which is a Russian hacker hacked into a digital billboard sign in Russia and fed hardcore pornography onto the freeway.
Oh, dude, I love you.
And you can actually see the video on this Gizmodo link where he actually showed, well, somebody with their cell phone is obviously pulled over and is just videotaping the billboard.
Oh, dude got jailed, huh?
He thought it was all a bunch of fun, but of course the Russian government didn't feel the same way, and he's now serving 18 months in prison.
Oh.
Plus an additional 4.5 years of prison time for another crime. So apparently he was he actually pulled this stunt off from his house, which was 1,126 kilometers away.
Dude, that's fantastic. It just shows you how to hack it.
Because the sign was in Moscow. Oh, God, could you imagine? They would have lost their friggin' minds.
Oh, dude, that's amazing.
But there you go.
So, was it an inside job?
No, he just hacked into the actual... He hacked into the advertising company that fed the digital feeds, and basically... He actually, funnily enough, didn't even plan to put hardcore video. Apparently, it was a random video.
Yeah.
He just happened to luck out. All right. Also for our geek friends out there, because I know what our geek friends are like. And so Delta Knight in our chat room has just put the link up if you want to see the link.
Oh, great.
And see the video. If you don't have a girlfriend and you're one of those lonely, pathetic nerds, sorry, that's probably half our audience, who sits in, you know, playing with Facebook and stuff like that and feel very lonely. Well, this company has basically come along now. Basically, it creates you a virtual girlfriend online.
What does it allow you?
What it basically does, it's called a service called Cloud Girlfriend. And you go in there and you define your perfect girlfriend. That's step one. Step two, the site brings her into existence, basically. You then connect and interact with her publicly on your favorite social networks.
Oh, dude, that's great.
So you can actually have this virtual girlfriend that you're having conversations with, and everybody thinks you're hot because you've got this hot girlfriend, but of course she doesn't really exist.
I think that's just fun. Like, I would have that set up just to see how far you could take it.
I kind of think it's sad and creepy, but that's me.
Jacob, don't worry. I wouldn't
really. It's sad, yet it could be beneficial for a lot of people.
Well, yeah, I'm sure there are lots of people.
It could teach social interaction if you actually set it up correctly.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's lots of people who would get something out of that. Yeah. I just kind of find it sad and creepy. What the hell is this? Why is this coming up? Go away. Don't want that. I want that.
Dave,
there we go.
You've really got to learn how to use that program.
I like my show notes on a laptop. What can I tell you? And my show notes aren't on a laptop anymore. They're on the iPad, and it's a little bit finicky for when you're trying to do everything else.
Can I ask you an iPad question, guys, just very briefly?
Of course.
I've done any research on it, and I should, I suppose. Do either of you use a component out cable?
I've tried to. I did it before they did the update, which allowed you to use it, so I never got around to it. I actually have a component cable, but nothing would run when I'd used it. So
did the iPad actually ever support the component? I don't think they supported it.
No, it didn't, but apparently there are certain updates and certain programs, like as an example, I think it's Cinex Player now supports using that out as well as the HDMI out.
Wait a second, is that a jailbroken app?
No, Cinex Player is it's a bit like VLC Player was. It's,
you use Cinex Player, don't you?
No, I haven't used it.
The Cinex Player?
Yeah.
Cinex Player.
Sorry,
yeah. But isn't that's the French one? Yeah, that's for
Movie Play.
That's AirPlay I'm thinking of. So Cinex Player. Yeah, okay. So you can use that to output but
files,
you're saying since the update it doesn't work, is that right?
No. Apparently it does now. I haven't tested it.
RGB definitely works. HDMI definitely works. Mm. But as far as component is
HDMI works? No. Are you serious? Because I thought that the iPad output was analog, not digital.
No. iPad 1 does support the HDMI out. It doesn't support the mirroring feature, which is an iPad 2 only feature.
Which
allows you
screen.
To put the entire desktop out. That's because it's got a more powerful graphics processor, which is Apple's argument, and I don't believe it, because Steve Jobs
was using it in his demonstrations.
Exactly. Steve Jobs has been mirroring the desktop of an iPhone since the very first generation of iPhone, so I don't buy that you can't mirror off of an iPod 1, but if you plug in the HDMI kit, it won't mirror from an iPod 1. It'll mirror from an iPod 2 only. iPad 2, sorry, I should say. Yeah. There is this new device. I was put it into the Geeks Picks of the Week. I'll save it for then. There is actually an adapter now that's called a 5-in-1 adapter. It's pretty cute. I'll show it to you in a second. Okay, let's finish off our geek news real quick, and we can say Master Chief helmets for real. Josh, this is for you. For those who play Halo... U.S. military
you
is
have
looking.
Me very excited.
The U.S. military is looking into helmets like the Master Chief's helmet, basically saying it's the future of military movement. So there are things like satellite feeds, heads-up displays, built-in night vision, panoramic views, synthetic visions.
No, dude,
hot,
and this,
awesome.
This doesn't surprise me at all, because if I've learned anything in life, it's that Tom Clancy always pre-predicts everything war-based.
Laser tagging.
Exactly. like, everything that we have war-based comes out of his ideas. So,
Halo's not Tom Clancy, though, is it?
No, it's not, but Ghost Recon had this concept for ages that we were going to have this by, I think, 2012? So that's kind of creepily
close.
So it's
not far off. Yeah.
I'm telling you, man.
Well,
this
there was augmented reality in Terminator, if I think back correctly.
Mm.
Yeah, but that was a robot. I'm talking about right. this is a heads up display. This is like Iron Man like heads up display.
Yeah, exactly. This is like the full working computer readout displays that
it's actually getting satellite feed at all times,
exactly.
Feeding you coordinates, GPS data. The laser, you know, those big laser tag devices they would use to tag targets, built into the helmet.
Exactly.
You know,
and
stuff like that.
I think it's amazing if you can get it to work.
It'd take some getting used to. I think it'd be quite disoriented.
Oh, you'd have to be trained
in the real world.
You'd have to absolutely have
you'd
to be trained.
You'd have to be a tech head from way back.
We're running over, so we're going to skip a couple stories here. I just want to say very quickly.
All of this.
Sorry?
We're going to skip pretty much
all of it. First of all, I'll just say that Mashable's got an article about, we always like fun, geeky things. Mashable's got an article about a guy who actually proposed to a girl by actually having "Will You Marry Me" engraved to the back of her iPad 2. So when he gave her iPad, on the back it said, "Will you marry me?"
Oh,
I think her answer was
really
yes, now give me my iPad.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was that one. A Brazilian man who needed a car, he was homeless. He managed to beg up a couple of $100 to start the project, and then by hand, out of junk scrap, built a car.
Fucking A.
And he had no previous experience in building a car, but I'll show Josh a picture. Show notes, you can see the picture of the car. There's the car he built.
He is my hero.
It's mostly bits of a Fiat, but it's a funny looking little car, but it works. And since getting his car, he's now got a job and all sorts of stuff. So it just shows you how mobility can
dedication,
help.
Dedication, man. Dedication.
Awesome.
And I thought this one is a
I'd
video.
I'd put that on my resume, man. Seriously.
I'd hire
I'd hire anybody. It's like I was broke and managed to build a car. I'm like, dude, you can do anything.
All right, hired. This is a video we're going to play here. This was actually it was kind of like Telstra marketing, but it did actually tickle me how funny it is. This is from Telstra and basically saying, can we create a 3G Wi-Fi hotspot using our thong? Now, for the American listeners, you're going to suddenly go, pardon me?
Yeah, I know. Now, I went the same place, guys.
A thong is not the G-string girl's underwear. A thong as in flip-flops that you wear.
Hotspot in your flip-flops.
In your flip-flops. Okay, so here's the video. Have a look at this.
Hey guys, thongs are great at everything except internet. So I was thinking, imagine if you could combine the mobility of your thong with the mobility of your mobile internet. Well, today I stop imagining and create for you the thong hotspot, and here's how I'm going to do it. So the first thing you need is a thong, right? Okay, left or right, both will work fine. And you also need your Telstra prepaid mobile Wi-Fi device. Take your thong and cut like a hole-shaped hole out of the middle of it. You take your mobile Wi-Fi device, you slide it in, and you seal it back up like that, and you're done. You've now got a handy Wi-Fi hotspot.
That doesn't look very sealed.
When you're on the go. Like if I want to go from my place to the chicken shop. Stick around because I'm going to take it one step further. It's going to blow your mind.
I have no idea what that graphic even represents. But there you go. Cut a hole in your thong, stick your device in there. All
He's
I can think is.
Trying to make it an off road thong.
Probably.
That was what it looked like.
It looks like to me. All I can think is, I am not about to go walking on my MiFi card. You know, I think that's a bad idea.
Well, MiFi cards are about to be, you know, the most unuseful device on the planet because you can now use your phone for
it. That being said, Josh, I got to say, I was actually out doing work on my laptop while I was sitting at East Gardens the other day, and I tried both devices. The MiFi is. By far faster than the
this.
iPhone.
Oh, I know this. Yeah, same
thing. Because I was actually using the iPhone for mobile hotspot, and it was working, but it was really sluggish. So I turned on my MiFi card, and wow, pages were just loading up like that. So,
yeah, I know.
Wait a second. MiFi, that's a jailbroken app, yeah?
No. MiFi is a portable Wi-Fi hotspot. You use a 3G card, and it's a little device. It's about the size of a credit card, about as thick as a matchbox.
Mm.
And it sits in your pocket and basically creates a little tiny little portable hotspot around you.
Mm.
And
Sorry, where do I get that?
Vodafone's got one now. Who's doing MiFis now? Chat room?
Everyone's
doing
them now.
Every
single company does them now.
So you can actually buy them.
I get mine for 30 a month, and that gives me 4 gigabytes.
Oh, I see. You actually have to pay.
Yeah, so all it is a data plan. Yeah. So, yeah. Like, mine's got...
And the device.
Mine's, yeah, and the device. Mine's got, I think... Funnily enough, I actually had a data 3G card that was part of my netbook. Yep. I bought my MiFi card from England. It was an unlocked MiFi from England, from their 3 network. They sent it over. It was much cheaper than buying one here. I just slipped my SIM card in.
Oh, there you go.
Lovely. Oh, so, nice.
So I didn't even have to buy the device here. I bought it via eBay. So
anyway, that's gonna make the mini
Telstra three SIM and Telstra
on the iPad redundant.
Well, no, what'll happen is they all become mini SIMs. I think the world is turning to mini SIM.
Telstra three, Vodafone, Optus, everybody does.
Yeah, everybody's doing MiFis now. MiFis are very cool. They're mobile internet MiFis. They've all got different brand names. I like MiFi, but basically it creates a little hotspot around you and connect up to 5 devices to it.
Mm.
Right, so the thing that I'm disappointed with about the new personal hotspot with the iPhone is that, I mean, obviously it's only taking from the 3G. If I go into a Wi-Fi area, you know, it's not going to allow a pairing, you know, between my iPad and the Wi-Fi of the hotspot that I'm using with my iPhone. But
why would you need it? You just use the Wi-Fi on the iPad itself.
Mm.
Much faster.
It's only really useful for 3G connections.
Yeah,
okay.
It's only for when you're outside of a Wi-Fi area. It's just there as a patch-in, basically. Okay, so that's your thong. I think that was just kind of funny. I don't think I would ever use it, quite frankly. Mm. I think the Air Force has got some cool-ass call signs nowadays, guys. Apparently, this article, and this is going to lead us into the Oxford Dictionary very quickly. Just very quickly, you do realize that the Oxford Dictionary has now included FYI and OMG in as official words, along with several others of that ilk. But I thought there's been some tweets, basically, that have actually been from the Air Force, and we've started to see things like Sheen 53.
Nice.
Is one. Cylon 41.
Nice.
So they actually say in this article, they say that that Charlie Sheen may not be an F-18, but it definitely looks like he's an EC-130. So there you go. That was kind of cool. We got the Oxford Dictionary, World of Warcraft Throttle. We've already talked about that. And in the most stupid news, and then we'll move on to some food. And the most stupid news this week, Germany, Austria, and Switzerland. And I will point out that in the article, it says Australia. It says Austria in the title, then says Australia. Australia is not one of the countries that is doing this. Austria, for those who are listening, Austria and Australia are two different places.
All right. Tell Ronald Reagan that.
I know. Anyway, Germany, Austria, Switzerland. No, Austria, guys. Anyway, Germany, Austria, and Switzerland have pulled a handful of episodes of The Simpsons off of television.
Oh, yes, I read this.
Because they felt that they were insensitive because they were showing nuclear accidents and stuff like that that were actually happening at the plant. And all I can say is, guys, really, this is... We start getting politically correct. We start getting too ridiculously politically correct. These are episodes that were made, some of them, 20 years ago. You know what I mean? They are not making fun of the Japanese. You know what I mean? They're not making fun of that problem over there. I can understand the Japanese not wanting to show them. It's the same situation that happened with the Twin Towers, though. And when the Twin Towers came down, everybody went berserk. They started to remove the Twin Towers from old movies. They digitally removed the Twin Towers from some old movies. You just then go, stop it. Just stop it. You know?
I think the case in Europe, though, is not so much about offending the Japanese. The case in Europe, I think, is not upsetting the population to thinking that all the lovely nuclear facilities that are right through Europe might do the same thing.
And the Simpsons is not going to do that.
The nuclear industry.
Mm.
The Simpsons is not going to do that, though. They've been doing this for years and years and years. We've been making fun of this for years.
In the same mentality, they should remove every single superhero that involves nuclear radiation. They should probably also remove Batman because he got dropped into a toxic vat of...
Where does political correctness end, is my point. The point is, like with the Twin Towers beforehand, you sit there and go, do you know what? The Twin Towers used to be there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So when we see those skylines of films that were made, you know, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, and we see the Twin Towers on the skyline, we don't digitally remove those because that's a piece of history. They were there, you know? We can't pretend like they didn't exist.
And more importantly, why are we trying to deface their memory, like, completely?
Because the argument at the time, luckily this insanity seems to have settled down now, but the argument at the time was it would be too heart-wrenching for people to see those images.
Get fucked.
I look at it and go, you know what? Germany and Austria and Switzerland have a long history of being way too sensitive.
Yeah.
Right? And, okay, granted, their history kind of says that, you know, maybe they should.
How about we do with this what people should be doing with the Twin Towers now, which is every time you see it in a movie, remember that it happened.
That's a good point. Inoculate, don't hide. Exactly. You know what I mean?
People can stare at it and go, that was a time in history that this happened due to this, around this time, and this is what happened
because
of it.
Think of it as a cautionary tale.
Exactly.
Anyway.
My God.
I am so sick of politically correct. I really am. Let's get into some weird geek food.
Yeah.
First of all, food?
Yeah, wait, like Heston Blumenthal?
The best. Japanese have bigger problems than The Simpsons.
Yes, absolutely. Now, we do a section every week, Jake, where we talk about the weird food around the web and the weird things that people are doing with food, the weird things people are eating.
How Geek actually has evolved.
I know, isn't it great? Delta Knight, well, remember, since we excised the movies from us, we had more time on our hands. could you get more decadent than this? Somebody has actually manufactured chocolate chip cookies stuffed with Oreo cookies.
Say again?
What the hell?
There you go, Josh.
My God.
It's an Oreo stuffed choc chip cookie.
That sounds amazing.
Don't you just want to try that?
Fucking A. How could that possibly go wrong?
According to the Geeks Are Sexy article, the headline is made of win and awesome. I love that. All right. And if that, you know, from that, which is just like, it's decadent, but God, we have to have it, to the things that people do with food. I'm going to show you a little video. Now, I've abridged this, and we're going to keep the mics open so we can keep talking about this. And I will describe what's happening for the audio listeners. But when you get a chance, you need to go and look at the full video and actually watch this. What we're watching here is a man who has actually got a carrot.
Don't worry, this is safe for work.
This is safe for work. And he's drilling some holes into this carrot.
With very improper technique.
Yeah. He's obviously done this an awful lot of times, though.
He's drilled out the core in the middle as well.
He's cored it already. He's put a core in it. Now, I've actually abridged this. He goes and he actually shaves it down and stuff like that as well to make it nice and perfect. But here we go. He grabs this. He takes his carrot. He puts in a clarinet mouthpiece into one end of the carrot, and a funnel into the other end of this carrot. And have a listen to this. Isn't that awesome?
Wow, that's pretty cool.
He made himself a carrot clarinet.
There you go. So anyone in music school that's saying that they don't have enough money for instruments.
You need a vegetable orchestra.
Ah, funny you should say that. Because what's next, before we go on to vegetable orchestras, what's next? If you listen, he actually has one of those devices where you can create multiple tracks on the fly. Hmm. He's actually set down one sound bed already. If you listen, he's got himself in the background. He sets down a second track. And now his third track comes. Is this guy awesome or what?
That's amazing.
He is just chock full of awesome. I could listen to this guy go all day, but we won't because we're running over. Please post that link. The link will be in our show notes. Delta, I'm sure, will throw it into the chat room right now. Musical instruments made of food. Yes, he's already put it up in the chat room right now. So those who are watching live can actually grab that. Jacob, did you say something about a vegetable orchestra?
Oh, God.
Yes, I did.
Wait for it.
Oh, she's a little off there.
They're all playing various things. We got carrots, cabbages. Carrot.
I bet you these guys are the worst kind of hippies, though.
Oh, I bet.
The kind of people that actually sat down and went, we don't need real instruments, we can use fruit. But, you know, well done, guys. Yeah,
far out.
New age music and everything.
It's a sustainable orchestra. Dude!
And at the end of it, no one has to get food.
They're pretty good, though. It's very percussion-based. It is very percussion-based.
Still.
But I will point out that that flute player, the recorder player, there's no extra bits added to her.
Yeah.
It is just a carol.
Well done.
So, there you go. There's the Fruit Orchestra, and you'll find the link for that, of course, in our show notes as well. Mm. That's been heavily appraised.
Available for download from iTunes.
If you actually find the video on that one, you'll actually see there's a very long introduction to the orchestra, which actually shows them making. They go shopping, they find all the fruit, and they go and they make all the vegetable instruments and so forth, and then they go into it. So it's actually well worth having a look at the whole thing. But there you go. There's our weird food, things that you can do with food rather than just eat them. I like the fact that we have a story about probably the worst thing you could ever put in your mouth, and we say eat that, and then we have a story about the things that are good for you that we say don't eat them, play with them.
Yeah.
Okay, and our last section of the week, as is what we do in this show, which is, of course, our Geek Picks of the Week. And I will go first this week because I have to apologize, because last week I was trying to recommend an app that I couldn't remember?
Oh, no.
So I will go first, and I'll get this out of the way. The first thing I'm going to recommend for you this week is actually a Macintosh app. So it's not even an iPad app. It's a Macintosh app. It's actually called Blotter, which is what I was trying to remember last week. It's available on the Mac App Store. Josh has actually seen it in operation here. I've got it turned off at the moment. But basically what it does is it creates a translucent desktop over your background image on a Macintosh, which is basically an overlay of the next week of your diary, and it just feeds the information straight out of iCal. So you can't modify it or update it. You do that through iCal, but anything that's in your iCal is right there on your desktop. So it means you're not going to miss another appointment because you don't actually have to start iCal in the morning.
Yeah.
It's just there on your desktop, no matter where you are.
What's that called?
It's called Blotter.
It's quite expensive, though.
It's about $12.99, and it's available in the Mac App Store, which I don't know if you can buy it outside of the Mac App Store. So if you're not on Snow Leopard, you're kind of out of luck at this point. But have a look for it. See if it is available outside of the App Store, because the App Store is only available to Snow Leopard and Lion people at this point. But that's one. Sorry?
Can I mention very quickly an app update?
Sure.
Flight Simulator Space Shuttle.
Never played
which
it.
I'm number 10 in the world at the moment.
79,000
players online. Is about to have an update, but it may only be iPad 2, which is very disappointing indeed.
Right.
And this is an external shot.
Knowing
of
your reputation,
the Orbiter,
dude, you'll probably be able to
chase
fix
plane.
That.
Sorry, Josh was just saying, knowing your reputation, you'll probably be able to fix that, dude.
I don't think so. So, no, that's my two bits worth. Flight Simulator. Actually, you can see it on Facebook
so,
as well.
So, sorry,
Matt,
I missed. What does it do? What's the update do?
It gives you an external view of the orbiter as you're flying, but it still keeps the HUD there, so you can fly externally.
Oh, cool. All right.
Yeah.
Neat.
Yep.
All right. And
that's it. Move on.
I have another iPad app that I'll throw out there as well called Trenches. I don't know if you've played this.
Yeah, I've heard of it. Yeah, Trenches. I've played it once on yours.
Yeah, I played Trenches. I've been having a bit of fun with this. Basically, it's a little World War I game where you got these little guys in little World War I, and they got to fight the Jerrys.
Yeah.
And you got to make your way from trench to trench, making your way to the other guy. So it's a side-scrolling platformer, but you can reinforce your troops and stuff, and you can call in artillery raids and stuff. It's a lot of fun. It's very simple. It's only $1.19 on the App Store.
Wonderful. I'll get that on my... My iTunes account.
Oh, that's right. You're having trouble with iTunes.
Yeah, it's not going to that.
All right, that's me. Josh.
I have a fantastic app. Now, I want to say this in the nicest possible way. There are two types of people that will get something out of this app, okay? One of them is people who have a grounding and a real understanding and love for music as a concept, like sound as an influence, and stoners. And look, I'm trying to be nice about that because, look, I will admit that there is a high level of stuff in this that will appeal to the stoner-like culture. But if you actually really remove that from yourself. The boys, they are called the Super Bros, I think is what they're actually called. But these guys have sat down and they've made an EP of music, so digital music. But what they've done is instead of releasing a video clip, they've released a game.
Cool.
And basically you play through this incredibly 8-bit... Yeah, Super Brothers. It's called Sword and Sorcery EP, and it's available now, and it has 5 stars from anyone that's played it, because reality is these guys know sound. And though it's this incredibly ugly-looking 8-bit setup for the graphics itself, the entire story is about the sound that you play through. So you go to all sorts of scary places and defeat monsters and all this sort of stuff, but it's all played through the actual touch screen, and you have to do things like rotate, and there's also situations where you're going to have to do puzzles based on that sort of stuff. And on top of that, you've got this great, interesting soundtrack that plays out, but only when the sound is necessary.
Oh, okay.
So really fascinating thing to play, and it really feels like a digital video clip. Like, it feels like a game-made video clip.
I gotta have a look at this.
Yeah, no, good. Look, I suggest it to anyone. There is certain aspects of social interaction. It's not trying to take over your account or anything crazy like that. It's just that it kind of incorporates parts where people you will run into in the game have Twitter accounts set up for their characters, and their characters will allay rumors and hints that will help you in the game.
Huh?
Cool. And it's fascinating. They've done a lot of work for this, and it really is the kind of thing where it's just trying to play with what the iPad can do.
It's pushing boundaries that we're yet to see, isn't it?
Exactly. I mean,
it's a more nuanced complexity that's developing. You think that it's only simple in its application of what's available.
The further you go through it,
more nuanced.
It's actually good you brought that up, Jacob, because I would like to say to everybody, give it time, because the first 3 minutes are actually intensely boring. Nothing really happens, and your character...
It's a great game, but the first 3 minutes are boring as hell.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I struggled to get into it, because it's like, there is nothing really happening, and there's no one to talk to or anything like that, and the story doesn't quite really go anywhere. There's a lot of fun winks to camera for people that have played games before, and the storyline plays out, even though it is sort of a medieval timed kind of fantasy thing, the people talk like we would talk. So it's like there's bits where it'd be like, such and such told you to get that, and we thought that was pretty neat. And that's like that's the way they talk. So it's good fun, and it's like it's peaceful and quiet. And the thing that I love is you get to the end of the first bit, because it's played out in sections, and the narrator of the story comes up and goes, well, look, you had fun with that thing. It's probably a good idea that you take a break and come back to this later. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because it's like games for people that don't play games.
Fair enough.
But yeah, I advise it to everyone. There's a reason it's getting so many stars. It is an interesting form of art that I think everyone should check out.
Cool.
Sword and Sorcery.
Yes, Sword and Sorcery.
I'll have to have a look at that. We've also got in our chat room now.
Oh, and definitely play with headphones. You have to play with headphones on.
Cool. All right. Callisint in our chat room says, I want to recommend DAPP, D-A-P-P, in the App Store. Now, this is the Mac App Store, I'm assuming, not the iPhone App Store. It says, it's $8, but it allows you to do iPhone app mockups on your iPhone, and you can export the code, and the mockups can be exported as PDFs. No, iTunes. All right, it is an iPhone app. All right, so...
Yeah, no, I saw this on the App Store. I couldn't quite figure out what it was, so I actually
What is it? A joke app?
Well, I'm trying to figure this out.
Maybe so you could actually... So it's sort of like creating your own apps. So if you needed something that you could access via your App Store, like...
Oh, I see. So you can play with... Oh, yeah, so it's like self-creator.
Yeah, it allows you to design apps for the iPhone.
Without actually designing.
Well, that'd be cool. Yeah, some people might find that useful.
Look,
like there are marketing
opportunities for the individual with this, because if you infer a particular app and see what sort of popularity ratings you get, you could raise the 20 grand to make it happen.
Money
and away you go.
Yeah. It sounds fantastic.
Yeah.
I wish I could download it. I'm not bitter at all about it.
What's wrong with your iTunes?
I just can't access it.
He's having problems with the account.
Yeah, like I cannot download anything. It just tells me my Apple iTunes account doesn't exist, but it's there and I can see everything about it.
If you log in via iTunes, there's the account.
I just can't update and I can't download anything.
I'd set up a new account.
I'm hoping not to do that because I have about $4,000 worth of things I have purchased through that account. So I'd rather not.
Yeah,
I've already sent emails off to Apple and everything like that, and I'm sure I have all faith that they will fix this for me. But I'm just.
It sounds like there's a. Right, it sounds now. Like to me, because it doesn't look like the account's been hacked because all the details are still there, the financials are
still fine.
It looks to me like they've been doing something behind the scenes and something has disconnected.
Yep.
From,
exactly. And
from
I'm sure
the actual
look
purchasing to the
it.
Account have disconnected somehow. And so he just needs to get that resorted out. Yep. Hopefully Apple will sort that out soon. One last thing in our picks of the week before we move on is, because I hinted at it before, I should bring it up very quickly, is this new connection kit that Delta sent through. This is the 5-in-1 iPad Delta, sorry, the iPad 1, no, iPad doesn't say iPad 1 or 2, I guess. It says iPad and iPad 2. Good. It's a 5-in-1 adapter. Josh, is this what you're kind of looking for yours? There you go. It has...
What has it got?
Component out.
Oh, guys, I would like to announce live that my iTunes account has been fixed. Thank you, Apple.
Yay, Apple. Well done. They must be listening.
Much love.
They must be listening to us. Okay.
That's amazing.
This is a 5-in-1 plugin. It plugs into the dock connector at the bottom. Now, be
please
aware.
Put that link up for people, Dell. Thank you, Dell. Man, this guy is so good. He's already put it up in the chat room while we're talking.
I know,
about
he's fantastic. Now, just be aware that according to the article, only one device works at a time.
Fair enough.
Okay. So, yeah. But one plug, SD card. As an SD card, micro SD card, USB port, HDMI port, component out. What is
oh,
it?
Wow. So you can plug in a PC keyboard, you can plug it to your computer.
Connect
you can...
camera, you plug in power.
Oh, I'm so buying one of those.
Isn't this just, it's $45, but I bet you can find it cheaper on eBay.
And that would solve...
the component
Jacob's thing about component. It's
yeah.
right
well,
there.
Well, would it? I mean, the fact is, it's still not going to mirror.
No, it's not going to mirror. But this is just components. So you're only going to mirror. Let's be very clear. Yeah. You're only going to mirror an iPad 2 with an HDMI cable and an iPad 2.
Yeah.
If you don't have or a jailbreak, unless you want a jailbreak.
Yeah.
If you don't want to jailbreak, which I don't want to, if you don't want to jailbreak, then it is iPad 2. FireWire.
USB.
No. HDMI.
Yes.
HDMI iPad 2.
Not FireWire, is that right?
Not FireWire. HDMI.
Oh.
So it's HDMI. So theoretically, I still couldn't play a game, for example.
On an iPad 2, you can, and apparently it's an awesome experience. What's that new racing game that's just come out? It's cost $2 million to develop or whatever it is. Apparently on HDMI, you can actually output to the HDMI 1080p quality to a TV set using the iPad just as the controller.
That would be surreal to play because
I want to try this.
So hang on, Dave. I want some clarification here. Mirroring in your parlance, you're describing the mirroring of the desktop of the iPad onto the
mirroring
exactly.
means whatever you do on your screen, whether you've got icons on screen or you've got a WordPress, it doesn't matter what it is. That is a one-to-one perfect representation of exactly what you're doing mirrored onto another screen.
But in this case, if I have the output, I can use an app, for example, and have the app
as long as the app supports output. Not all apps do.
Right.
So if the app supports output, like the movie player, for instance, then you can hit the button and it'll actually send your movie signal to a TV set via.
But for example, if I wanted to use a PowerPoint scenario.
Yes, yes. In fact, one of the big selling points of iPad 1 was the VGA connector and Keynote. So you would set up a Keynote presentation, like a PowerPoint presentation, and you could use the VGA adapter to plug straight into a data projector.
So when you say VGA adapter, what's that with the camera connector kit?
No. VGA adapter is one that's got a VGA plug, like an old monitor plug.
No. I know what the VGA plug is, but I'm saying how do you connect it to the iPad?
There is a VGA adapter. It's a VGA plug on one side and a 30-pin plug on the other. Yeah. So you just plug that into the bottom of your iPad and you hook up your external display, whether it be a projector or what have you, and you can actually run your presentation straight off your iPad.
But would I be able to do that with this new
theoretically, you can do that with HDMI. I would imagine you can do that with HDMI. Yeah. You'd have to do some more research. I don't have the HDMI kit, so I can't actually confirm or deny any of these things, but it looks good. Actually, speaking from experience, it only costs $100 to $250 to get an iPhone app coded. Well, put it this way, Calisynth is talking about developing app. First thing you need to do if you want to develop an iPhone app or anything is you have to join the developer program where you get the kit. It costs $99. Mm. You join the service, and then theoretically, if you do all the work yourself, it's free after that. So once you've got the service, once you've got the right coding platform to work from, theoretically, if you don't hire a programmer, it's whatever it costs you to develop your apps. So, but you can buy, you buy $199 to buy the to join the developer program, basically.
Yep.
So, and then when you join the developer program, you are given all the appropriate things like the simulator and all that sort of stuff to create the app. Anyway, we've got to move on because we're running really late. So we're going to wrap this one up and say, if you have anything to say about us, our show, our stories, anything like that, you can go ahead and send us a voicemail at 02-801-13167, or you can use our Skype ID, Geek Actually, all one word, or you can write to feedback@geekactually.com. You can get merchandise, join our fan page on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. Basically, anything you want. Anything, any way you think you can communicate with us, you can. All you got to do is go to geekactually.com, and there is a follow us button. Click on that follow us button, and all of our various links are there to be able to find your way into everything that we do. And to remind you that we do record this show live every Saturday. We normally start, typically start, at around the 12 p.m.-ish mark. Today we're a little bit late. That's Australian Eastern Time. Now, this is going to get confusing. Isn't daylight savings over this weekend?
I don't know.
Yeah, all right.
Yes. All right. It's still Eastern Daylight Savings Time.
All right, so in that case, Australian Eastern Standard Time, which is UTC plus 10. And you can watch this show live, geekactually.com/live. We have a couple of friends that we like to always give a quick shout-out to. First of all, we're going to give a shout-out to the Weekend Ronin boys. WeekendRonin.com is the home of the real junkies, R-E-E-L junkies. You can also find their fine podcast on iTunes. They're a movie review show where they drink a lot of tequila and then talk about movies. So it's kind of like the polar opposite to us, unless we go. We should drink tequila. One day we're going to. I think we should drink tequila. Anyway, so they drink tequila and review movies, and they're good fun boys. We love them a lot. So guys, you're our boys. Josh Spencer over at attackninja.blogspot.com is the man who created our cartoon artwork for our cover arts, and he is a legend. And you can see all of his stuff over there. Josh, I believe you have another website you'd like to throw out there.
RawDLC.com is a gaming website. Come check us out. We've just recently got a whole new show that we are broadcasting out, and very soon we will be going video. It's the first space that we've announced.
I've got a shout out.
All right, we'll get to you. Hold on a second.
Go ahead.
wait your turn.
That's it.
All right.
Check us out.
I was gonna say, Jake, where can people find out more about you?
More about me.
Well organized, sir.
No, I didn't want to do a shout out for me. I wanted to do a shout out for Steve Conroy.
Stephen Conroy.
Oh, Stephen Conroy.
Yeah. Why?
Here it is.
Thank you, Jake. If people want to find out more about you, can they find you anywhere on the internet?
All the W's .projectmemoirs.com.
How's that going, by the way?
Very well.
For those who don't know, Jacob is a documentary filmmaker. So
I'm a documentary filmmaker. I also do audio guides, but I also have a video memoir service. At the moment, I'm making a memoir for a World War II Lancaster bomber navigator who is unfortunately on his way out. But I got someone else to go and film him in the UK, and I'm editing and producing it here. So there, I have a private documentary service.
Fantastic. That's very good. I'll have to go check out your site at some point. Can you do me a favor and email me those links so I can put them in the show notes for people?
Yep, certainly.
Thank you very much. That brings us to an end of another fine episode of Geek Actually. I don't think I have anything else to add. Do you have anything else to add? Well, in that case, I'm going to say thank you so much for coming on the show, Jacob. It's been a long time since you've joined us for a full show.
I've enjoyed every minute of it.
And you are always welcome, sir. All right.
Excellent. I'll be back again, I promise you.
Not a problem. We're gonna sign out here with our usual bit of music. We want to say thank you to our chat room. Thank you, Josh, most importantly, for being here in the studio with me.
Not a problem.
And thank I'm so you. Happy your iTunes is working again. Now you'll be in a better mood for film, actually.
It's not working now.
Oh, stop, man! Stop working again. Shit. All right. We like to steal this from Delta Knight. He started it, but we're stealing it. So we're going to say to everybody, geek on, and we're going to see you all next week. Stay tuned for our film show, which is coming up next on the live feed. For the audio listeners, find it on the iTunes film, actually, feed. We have, do you know what we have here? We actually have end credits. Our live listeners. Normally the music is added later, but today we're doing it live. Do it live! All right, so guys, see you all next week. We'll be right back.